this is a very difficult fear to give. It's difficult for a couple reasons. First of all, this is a week that many of us traditionally avoid as far as giving a shiur, because Tazrim and Tzar are just impossible topics and very difficult to tackle. Second, it's a week that always lends us, and here in this format, in our regular shiur, we've almost always had the opportunity and often pursued the opportunity to speak about Yom HaZikaron, which is today, Yom HaTzmaut, which is tomorrow, and or general issues of Vayikra, and from time to time we've discussed, as we did last week, issues relating to the mitzvah Sfirat HaOmer, or of the morning during the Omer, lots and lots to talk about. The one thing we all run away screaming from is Sarat, which is a good thing, because you don't want to get it. But something occurred to me, which I thought was worth sharing. I hope it's worth sharing. And then again, the events of the last few days have made any shiur you give doubly significant and doubly difficult. To properly honor Moriv Rabbi, Rabbi Aaron Rav Yechiel, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, I'm going to give the shiur his honor and his memory, and hope that it will be worthy of that that dedication. Parshat Tazria is misleading by name, because whenever you hear the word Tazria, you immediately go in your mind to Tzara'at, and you almost can make the mistake of thinking, well, that's what Tazria means, because it's almost the same letters, right? And you think the whole parsha is about Tzara'at, it's a short parsha, Tazria, and in fact the next one is Mitzora, so Tazria and Mitzora seem to be a match. Matter of fact, an interesting exploration is whether or not Tazria and Mitzora are really essentially one parsha that because of occasional calendar needs we split, or whether they're essentially two parashot, which because of calendar needs occasionally we combine. The same question is asked famously in the context of Nitzavim Vayelech, but in the case of Tazria Metzora, it seems like such a natural fit, and by the way, the two put together are not such a huge parsha, they're just really hard to lane. Part of the reason they're hard to lane is because of the very famous Hu Vahi problem. Just listen to your Baal Kriya the Shabbat, how often Hu becomes He and He becomes Hu, which is why people have jokingly said, for Tazria Metzora, go lane in the Galatiana Shul, and then you can always say He and it doesn't matter. But the other reason, and this is a little bit of a confession of the Baal Kriya, is the more that you understand the Kriya, the easier it is to lane. Right? Because you can actually, as you're reading the words, sort of picture the things happening and see them evolving in front of you. And when you don't know what the words mean, and you don't know what the concepts are, then it becomes much more difficult. Well, Parshat Tazria is, Parshat Tazria and Mitzora are chock full of things which are very difficult for us to understand, which are the halachot of which are complex. The realia is removed from us, what these colors look like, what these splotches look like, and that's even before we start getting to the head, into the beard, into the clothes, into the house, and everything else. Very difficult. So as a result of that, like I said, people will often avoid it, and as I said, they also often just automatically, because we don't necessarily learn B'Iyun, to assume that Tazria really has something to do with Sarat. It doesn't. And the opening of our parsha is kind of odd, because it has nothing to do with Sarat. What's the first eight psukim of our parsha? They're about a yoledet, a woman who gives birth. It's almost at the opposite end of the spectrum. A Mitzora is an individual who's suffering terribly. Okay, fine, the woman's suffering terribly, but the woman's giving birth and had a baby boy or a baby girl. And then there's laws. How long is she tmeah for? They gave my kids a quiz around the table the other night, and I said, okay, tell me six different numbers that show up in the parsha of your letter. All right, so they all got two. What other numbers are there?
33.
All right, 33, good. Before we get to 33, go in order. Got two. Okay. Seven. All right. Okay, right. Eight. Eight. 14, 33, 66. Hike. Right? Two, why two? What are two? So what does the woman bring after her entire period of 2 miles up?
Two birds.
Right? Good. Why seven? What's seven? That's how long she's tmeah if she had a boy. Why eight? Because what's mitzvah shows up in this parsha? Mitzvah mila, which is why, by the way, many halachic discussions that are by form or by system sort of forced into being about the parsha. We'll talk about Brit Milah on this Shabbat, because that's something that, okay, I'm kind of comfortable and we can talk about it. Comfortable for whom, I don't know, but it's not Sarat. And then 14 is how long she's Tmeah if it's a girl, and 33 is how many days of Dam Tohar if it's a boy, and 66 how many days of Tamo Tohar it's a girl. But in the end, after either 40 days for a boy or 80 days for a girl, and sometime after that, the woman has to bring a korban, which she owes to the Mikdash, and she cannot participate in the world of Kodashim until she's brought that korban, which is called Mechuseret Kapara, and that korban is two birds. Immediately after that, and you see it in source 3, you have Sarat. Now, what I did in source 3 is, in a tiny little paragraph, I jammed together the whole parsha. What I did is, just a summary, there are four different kinds of Sarat that can happen on the person. There's, of course, Sarat on the clothes and Sarat on the houses, and maybe we'll deal with that in a future time, but it's beyond what we can deal with right now. Although we may come back to the Sarat of the house. What? Good. So the word Tazria means if she becomes fertile or fertilized or whatever it is and gives birth. It has nothing with the word Sarat. It's from the word Zera, which means seed. Sarat means something else. What does Sarat mean? Good question. I don't know. There's people who have dealt with the etymology of the word. I'm not sure that they know. It's a difficult word. But we know that Sarat is not leprosy. We know that it's some sort of a skin affectation. All right, and so there's four kinds of Sarat that can happen on a body. One of them happens on your skin. Part of your skin, and the Masachet Megayim goes through this, what the shear is, a certain amount of the skin goes white, a certain color of white, very sharp white. And then there's a hair inside of that called discoloration. And then the Kohen has to come and make a determination. Is the person Tahor because it's just something else? Or are they Tamei, in which case they have to go into quarantine, and then after a week, the Kohen takes a look and says one of three things. Either nothing there, you're free to go, you were not Tamei. Number two, you have to stay in Hezger for another week. Number three, you're absolutely sorry, get out of town. And you have to leave town. Okay, that's Tzarat. There's another kind of Tzarat which can happen, and this is all in that little paragraph, which is Tzarat as a result of Shechin. What's Shechin? Shechin is boils. Because you have a skin trauma, a dermatological trauma. And then after it's gone and there's a scab, over the, on the scab suddenly develops this nega, this discoloration. That is another form. There's a related one, which is a michva. A michva means you got burned on your skin. Now this is all on the body. You got burned on the skin, and then when it healed over, then suddenly there's a nega that appears there, and the halachot of each one of these things are intricate. The size, the coloration, the spreading, if the hair is outside of the thing and then it spreads and includes it, all sorts of interesting and certainly, in a pragmatic level, arcane debates and discussions. And then there's yet one other kind of tzarat on the body, which is tzarat, which is on the head, which has to do with a certain kind of yellowish hair appearing. Okay, that's tzarat. What is tzarat? Well, we just described more or less what it looks like and how it could appear, and that it is the Kohen who has to see it, and has to see it in daylight, only during mid-morning or mid-afternoon, and can't see it on Shabbat and Yom Tov, and can't see it on a regel, and can't see it at a chatan for a chatan, because it's his regel. All sorts of limitations that really prevent the Kohen, and by the way, a Kohen cannot see the negaim of a relative, ein adam ro'e negei atzmo, or negei krovo. And therefore, by the way, that leads us with a really interesting conundrum. When who was the first most famous mitzvah in history? Miriam. And who were the Kohanim? Her brother and her two nephews, right? No problem. Okay, and then the Midrash deals with that problem. But that's more or less the layout. But what is this tzarat? So I want to look at what the tzarat is from the perspective of source 4, which is taharat ha-mitzvah. In other words, if we can see what process the fellow or the woman has to go through in order to become re-entered into the community and re-purified from this experience of Sarat, maybe we can then look back and try to figure out what is it that they were going through. Why is it treated so badly? Somebody asked me recently, why is it that Sarat gets a parsha and a half? It's huge. I mean, from our perspective, of course, it's a challenge because it's not practical, it's something we deal with, where as far as we're concerned, Surat doesn't exist anymore, and so therefore, that is itself difficult. But even in a world in which Surat does exist and operate, it's way more press than you would think it gets. And by the way, how many people in Tanakh do we have in history that got Surat? A tiny handful. So it's not like some sort of like Korbanot, which every month of Gedolah Shtig, there's people bringing Korbanot, and we have records of Korbanot being brought, and Elkanah comes with his family every year to bring Korbanot, right? Instead, this is something that is very arcane. It's very, very unusual. All right, consider making a couple more copies. I think we're low. Thanks. Okay. So we take a look at Taharat HaMetzorah, and perhaps from that we'll get a clue. Okay, I'm going to summarize this because I want to get to the second side of this. The day that a Metzorah is declared clean, and you can see this in this paragraph here, the Kohen goes out of the camp, outside of the camp, and what does he see? He sees that the Tzaraat is gone. The Kohen Tzahor. What's the first thing they do? They take two birds. Now, some of this will sound familiar, not because any of you have been to this ceremony recently, but they take two birds. They take one of the birds and they shecht it. And they mix together in the blood of that bird a piece of cedar wood, some grass, like a hyssop, and a red thread. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mix them together and take the live bird and put the four of them together and then send the live bird out. The live bird goes free. Now, this sounds like a combination of two other things that we're familiar with. What does it sound like?
Kippur.
Yom Kippur, which part of it is the Yom Kippur part? The Seir Lazazel, exactly. And what other else does it sound like?
Paraduma.
The components are exactly the same. As a matter of fact, when we shecht the bird, we then do a hazah seven times with that blood, which is exactly what we do with the paraduma when we shecht it before we burn it and get the ashes. Okay. The Metzorah then comes and enters into the city. He stays there for 7 days. And on the seventh day, they shave his entire body.
Right in the middle, 9, 7.
One second. I take it back. On the day of descending the bird, they shave his entire body. He goes to the mikvah, comes back into the city, waits 7 days. On the seventh day, 7 days, he's still tamei, minor tamei.
He does
a full shaving again, and then he brings korbanot. He brings these korbanot to the mikdash. Once the korbanot are all offered and the whole ceremony is done,
this would be a beard as well.
Then he's
body hair.
Everything is shaved. Everything. Eyebrows. Everything is shaved. Everything is shaved. Every bit of hair is shaved. Right. So now he brings three korbanot. Thank you, Aryeh. And the three korbanot are two lambs and a ewe. The ewe is a chatat. The two lambs are an olah and an asham. Parenthetically, if he cannot afford that, what does he bring? One keves as an asham and two birds. Olah and chatat. Sounds a little familiar. Okay? Now, he brings something else that nobody else brings. He brings these three korbanot, which itself is unique, and he brings a flask of oil. What do they then do? Let's take a look. We'll read it. The process right there in the Torah. Pasuk Yod. Uvayom Hashmini. So he was 7 days. He was in the city, but not yet fully integrated. The eighth day, on the seventh day, he shaved his body again. On the eighth day, he takes these two animals, he comes on in, okay, and skip to Pasuk Yod Daled, the next big print. V'lakach ha-kohen midam ha-asham. They shech the first animal as an asham. The kohen takes the blood. V'natan ha-kohen al-tuch ozra mitayayim anit. He puts some of the blood on the ear, the right ear of this mitzorah. Valbon yadoim on his right thumb. Valbon ragoim on his right big toe. And then what does the kohen do? Balakacha kohen milog hashamen. He takes this flask of oil that does not appear in the context of anybody else's korban. The atzak akach, by the way, oil appears in the context of many korbanot, always as an accompaniment with the flour, as a mincha, but not as an independent gift. Balakacha kohen milog hashamen. The kohen then takes this flask. The atzak akach kohen esmoli. He pours it on the kohen's left hand. The Tavala Kohen's boy in my knee, now Shevin HaShalk Vosholitz, and the Kohen takes, he's got a bunch of oil in his left hand, he dips his right hand into his left hand where the oil is. And what does he do with the oil? He puts it on the Metzora's ear, on the Metzora's right toe, right finger, right thumb, and right toe, right big toe, exactly al Makom Dam HaSham. Exactly on the place, al Dam HaSham, where the Dam HaSham is. And then what does he do with the rest of the oil? He puts it on the head of the Metzora. Right? And then, afterwards, the Kohen brings the other two korbanot, and the Metzora is tahor.
Crazy stuff, huh?
What the heck is going on here? So I think that we can actually get a clue from one of the halachot here, and from the one story that we have in the Torah about Sarat. And the story, of course, the story of Miriam. So you turn the page. And look at source 6. Source 5 simply says that if he's poor, then he brings the two birds instead. And the same thing is done with the birds, that before the birds are brought, the lamb, which is the asham, is shechted, and afterwards the oil is put on the same places, the ear, the big thumb, and the right thumb, and the right big toe.
Was this the whole thing with Rabbi Gamliel
with the birds also? No, that was with the Oledet, and that was... that was an attempt to put the prices down. Now, in the story of Miriam, after Hashem speaks to Miriam and Aaron and lets them have it, Vayecharaf Adonai Bam Vayelach. Now, let's look very carefully. In past years, by the way, we've looked at this parsha, the other part of it, which is what it is that Hashem said and what that says about Moshe's prophecy, and how we understand Rambam's codifying that Moshe's prophecy is there. Now we're looking at the results. The Anan Sarmi Ala Oel, the cloud left, right? And the Midrash tells a beautiful thing. It's like a king who says to his pedagogue, to his child's tutor, you need to punish my kid, but wait till I'm gone. And I want to see it. The Anan Sarmi Ala Oel, Vine Miriam Mitzarat Kashalig. Miriam is white as snow. Vayifan Aaron Avayam Vine Mitzarat. Aaron turns to her and he sees she's Mitzarat. Vayomar Aaron Moshe, Bi Adoni. He says, please. Please do not hold us on this sin that we foolishly did, speaking about you this way. Alnati kamet. We do not want Miriam to be like Asher b'tzeito merecha nimo, that at birth vayachel chatzi v'saro, meaning stillborn, essentially. That's, we don't want to see that. Right? And the most famous short tefillah, right? What did the Gemara say? If somebody turns to you and says, look how quickly that guy davens, is not how short his davening is, as you think he's shorter than Moshe, El na refana la. Okay? Moshe says this very short tefillah, Hashem, please heal Miriam. Okay. Now, Miriam is then sent out of the camp. Evidently, Hashem heals her. Because how long is she out of the camp? 7 days. Right? For 7 days she's out of the camp, and then they bring her back in, and they go. What's going on here? Why is Tzarat so critical? Why is it such a super tumor thing?
Because it's contagious?
Not all contagious. There's nothing contagious about it. What is so terrible about it? So if you look in... Bami Bar Yud Tet, which you have in front of you, we already kind of touched on this. Many of the items and the procedures that are involved in Tzarat HaMetzora are also part of the process of Parah Adumah. You shech this animal outside. The bird, the cow. You spritz 7 times with the dam. You then mix into the results of it a cedar wood and his beautiful sforno at the beginning of Chukat about why these particular items, a red thread and hyssop, and you mix that into the mixture, and then that's part of the purification process. Okay. But what's with the shaving? And what's with the oil? The oil that goes on exactly the spot where the dung goes. And then on his head. I don't get it. So I'd like to start by suggesting the following. I think the key to understanding that all things starts with the shaving. I'm going to use a term which sounds very odd in our context, but I think it's an accurate term. What does a person look like if they are absolutely clean-shaven, meaning there is not a hair anywhere on their body?
Like a
newborn baby. I once met a fellow who had been in Siberia, not of his own choice. And evidently he was also the object or the victim of some experiments. And he did not have a hair on his body anywhere. At least not that I could see. His head, beard, and he wanted to have a beard. He could not grow any hair. And it was a bizarre look. This person looks like a brand new born baby. So let's think about what's happening. Let's start with this, which of course this week for many of us is a very painful reality. The Rav once said that when Reb Chaim got very depressed about mortality, he studied Masachet Ohalot. He said, by learning the halachot of death, you get mastery over death. And that's part of the reason that I stuck with this subject for today. When a person is ill, we do everything we can for them. With the best treatment, we daven, we say tillim, and we see to their needs, and we visit with them, and we try to make them comfortable, everything we can, up until the last breath. After that last breath, we then have a very simple job, which is to bury them and to make sure that everything is done proper covered. And then it's our job to do what we can with their memory, to honor their memory, and to deal with our own feelings of loss. The Metzora, like the Rambam says in his beautiful passage at the end of Hilchot Tumat Tzaraat, is really a wondrous thing. It's a nace that we don't have anymore. That a person is essentially being told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're dead. You're dead. And now you've got to come back to life. And what I'm going to do to you to signal to you that you really should be dead is I'm going to make part of you look dead. What does Tzaraat look like? It looks like dead person. Not dead skin, like a dead person. I got a little dead person on my arm. And it's a sign from HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying, that's what you should be. A phenomenal statement. And so what happens with the Tahara of the Metzora after he's been outside of the camp? Because his essence doesn't belong at the camp. He's not a living person anymore. He's outside of the camp. When he's finally able to come in, what's the first thing we do? We do a mini paraduma. Tahara. Same materials. Same process. Outside of the camp. Shechting. Not a para, a bird. But he's not dead. And therefore, there's another bird that flies away. We've got somebody who's dead, but not dead. I mean, almost dead. He's dead, but not dead. And so therefore, we do a full paraduma on him, plus another bird that goes away. Because the bird that goes away, like you said, is the Seir Mishtalech. What does the Seir Mishtalech do? It brings the kapara for everybody. So it's not a Seir, it's still a bird. Kapara for this person. Let's go back. He then comes into the city, but he has to shave his entire body. Why?
We're a new person.
He has to be reborn. Like I said, it's an unpopular phrase to use, but he has to be reborn. So he's fully reborn. And he waits 7 days. Why 7 days? Because what did we learn at the beginning of the parsha? And now you know why Yoledet comes first. The woman has a baby boy, and then what happens? She's tamei for 7 days. And then what happens on the 8th day? He enters into the brit. So this guy is going through rebirth. And for 7 days he's out. And on the 8th day he enters into the brit. What happens to the brit? He brings korbanot, and what do we do with the dam? Just like hatafat dam. But here the dam goes on him. On these particular points, and I can't yet conjecture why. But we're not done with that. Because all that does is bring him back to life. All that does is declare he's alive again. The tzarat is gone. But he needs something else. When do we ever put oil on a person or on a thing? When we're sanctifying them. So this person has the shemen, which is a unique korban. Nobody else brings shemen. He brings shemen, and the shemen goes exactly on the spot of the dam. Because this person has to come further in, because he was further out. So not only is there kapara for whatever he did that caused him to be dead but not dead, but now there's kedusha. Now, how do I see that? Because I see in this description where Aharon speaks to Moshe about their sister, he's not just saying her color. That's what Tzaraat is. Tzaraat is dead but not dead. Pray for her that she should not be dead but not dead. And that's the process that the Mitzvah goes through. You understand why Yoledet comes first. Because Yoledet becomes the model for that. Now the Mitzvah is very much like a Yoledet, and therefore if the Mitzvah can't afford the big korbanot, what does he bring? A korban Yoledet. Two birds. But besides the korban Yoledet, he has to bring one other. He still has to bring an animal for an Hashem. For whatever thing he did that caused him to be dead but not dead, that he has to have kapara for. So he still has to bring that one, and that's the one that's dam goes on him. The other korbanot, he can do the Yoledet model. Thinking about this, and I was very bothered by the shaving. The shaving is just weird. It doesn't appear anywhere else. Nobody else shaves. There's one other person who shaves, and that is a Nazir. But a Nazir doesn't shave his whole body. What does a Nazir do? When his time is up, he shaves his hair, and the hair goes under the fire of the Dud HaShlamim, and then he could shave his head like as he normally would.
All the
B'nai Aaron. There we go. Not exactly B'nai Aaron. Good. Excellent. Look at source 8. Thank you. Look at source 8. And I'm going to tell you in a minute where this entire shiur came from. It came from a Mishnah in the Goyim that I couldn't figure out. In the process of being metaher the levim to join the service, the chot ha'sel ahem letaharam, hazeh aleihem mechatat, they have to have the mechatat, the paraduma water on them, ve'aviru tara kol b'saram, they have to have their entire body shaved. It's the only other place where that happens. So Rashi on the spot says, why is their entire body shaved? Moshe Darshan taught, because the Levim, now watch this, jujitsu. The Levim are coming in place of the Bechorot, and the Bechorot lost their job because they did Avodah Zarah. And Avodah Zarah is called Zivchei Meitim. And a Metzorah is like a mate. Somebody sing Chagadya, please. Okay? It's a long route to get to that. I don't think we'd have to go that far. I mean, it's a very simple explanation. What was Levi's original destiny? Shaved Levi's original destiny. Spread out. Not at the center of things, but on the periphery of things. How'd they earn their way back in? They're the ones who said, very good. So how'd they earn their wings? To killing. That's how they earn their bars. So what do they have to do now in order to come into the avodah? What do they have to do in order to be able to come to the Mishkan? The first thing is hazeh alam mechatat. Why? To tell people they have to mechatat. Second thing is they have to be reborn. the entire Shevet has to reinvent itself as the people of peace, not the people of war. That's what the Shevet now is coming into the middle. They're starting over. And the model for this is the Metzorah, who's getting a new lease on life and has to start over and go through the entire process. So not just have the Dam that's Mechaper on what he did wrong, but the Shemet that's Mekadosh him for a better life. So where did this whole thing start? There's a Mishnah in the Negayim, Perek Yud Gimel. And I have to be honest with you, I never understood this Mishnah. If a Metzorah is standing under a tree, a Metzorah, mind you, is standing under a tree, and one of us, who isn't Tameh, walks past and we're under the same branch, we become Tameh. But if I'm under the tree, and the Metzorah walks past, and he's just walking, I'm not Tameh. Not like a mate. And if the Metzorah stops and stands still, I am Tameh. What's going on? I don't get it. And the answer is that a Metzorah is Metameh Bebia, and a mate is Metameh Be'ohel. Be'ohel means that if I'm under the same cover, the same room as a mate, I'm Tameh. It also means if I put my arm over a mate, I'm Tameh. It also means that if a mate's arm is somehow stretched and I walk under it, I'm Tameh. What's the halach of Metzorah? If I walk into a Metzorah's house, I become Tameh. What makes it the Metzorah's house? The fact that he's sitting there. Even if he's sitting there for a minute under the tree, it becomes his house. And if I walk under the tree, no walls, I become Tameh. Very bizarre. Where did it come from? The answer is that a Metzorah is a little bit like a mate. He's dead, but not dead. Take a look at the very bottom, the Midrash on the Pasuk, that the Aaron said to Moshe. Al nati kamate. Let Miriam not be like a mate. Maha mate metame be'ohel, af Metzorah metame be'bia. Bia meaning entering into the room. And now that explains the very famous passage that we have all over the Midrashim, it's in the Masechet Avodah Zarah, that Metzorah Chashuv Kamet. A Metzorah is considered like a dead person. What does that mean? We list it with three others, Mishe and Lopanim, and Ani, and Suma. Somebody who's blind, somebody who's poor, somebody who's childless, a Metzorah. Sounds like, you know, four Nebuchadnezzars. Don't like they're dead. But that's not what it means. Metzorah Chashuv Kamet is speaking to what Tzaraat really is. As a matter of fact, what's the full word for tzaraat used throughout the parsha? Nega tzaraat. What's a nega? A nega is a plague. Where do we find the word nega show up? First time nega shows up. Paro is the king of Egypt. That's no chiddush there. He takes Sarai into his house. Vayinaga Adonai et Paro negaim gedolim et beito. Advar Sarai should have run. Nega is an attack, it's a punishment by God. And that's, of course, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does, brings Negaim against Mitzrayim. So Nega Tzaraat isn't just a disease. It's not just an affliction, it's not just a dermatological condition. It means you're dead, but you're not dead. And therefore your Tahara is partially taken from the Tahara Paraduma, of Tumat Mate, you're a walking corpse Ki'ilu, and part of it is taken from the Kaparat Sarim Shtaleach, because there's a reason that Hashem gave you that sign, because there was something inherently infected, I'm going to use that word, in you, that caused you to be partially dead, for which you need Kapara. And therefore we have these two things coalesce, along with the Giluach of the Levim, come in which we're essentially saying this person has had a new lease on life. And in order for them to fully embrace what it is they need to do, they need to go through the Paraduma phase, they need to be reborn, and then they need to go through not only the Kapara, but the Kedusha of the Shemen, which brings them fully back into the fold.